So today I'd like to share with you our findings when we looked at factors influencing provision of school-based influenza vaccination clinics in King County, Washington. That's where Seattle is. And this is what we'll cover today during our brief time. So the background, as was mentioned, there were new ACIP recommendations for immunizing children through age 18 with influenza that helped motivate this study. We had read about the pilot research that found school-based health clinics were very effective in getting the influenza vaccine out, but those had used free flu mist or free vaccine and also often had paid or of volunteer support staff to administer it, so we wanted to know how would it work without some of those supports. There were three pediatric deaths due to flu in King County during flu season 2007. And then finally, Public Health, Seattle and King County had done an influenza promotion. We sent letters to schools, school districts, and school nurses encouraging them to offer school-based health clinics, and we did that twice, both in June of 07 and in September of 07. We let them know how they could find vaccine. We gave them a list of commercial vaccinators who had indicated to us they were willing to immunize children, and so we encouraged them to use that information and to make school-based flu clinics available at their school. Our research objectives were to assess the provision of the school-based flu clinics in King County, Washington, and to identify factors that would influence a school's perceived ability to either offer or not offer these clinics. We also hoped to find some models that schools had created that worked that we could share then with other schools who were feeling frustrated or weren't able to overcome barriers. We used a survey, a two-arm survey, with 28 items for schools that had offered school-based flu clinics and a 15-item questionnaire for those that hadn't. We pilot tested with nurses from surrounding counties. We snail mailed invitations to participate in an online survey using SurveyMonkey, and we sent electronic reminders to school nurses. So we invited all 19 school districts and 671 public and private schools to participate in the survey. Here's how many took the survey and then actually completed were 17 districts and 145 schools. The largest reason that we had to exclude schools or districts were that they completed the first question, did you offer a school-based flu clinic, yes, no, and didn't answer any of the other questions on the survey. So we took those out. They weren't helpful. And among the schools that completed the survey, we had 58% public schools, 30% private schools, and another 12% just didn't declare. So our survey didn't, it was allowed to be anonymous in case any of the respondents felt like they didn't want to out their school or themselves. And that turned out to be a challenge, but that's how we set it up. And the public-private mix reflects King County's mix, where we have 68% public schools and 32% private schools. So the results, 36% of schools said that they offered flu clinics at school. And what we had when we looked at it, public versus private, 43% of the public schools that responded were able to offer clinics, whereas only 25% of the private schools did so. Reasons for offering. The most common reason given, and again, schools were allowed to check more than one. They could check all that applied. So 79% said they offered school-based flu clinics to reduce faculty absenteeism, followed by the fact that it was requested by staff and faculty. In the orange marigold there, you could see that 27% said they offered these clinics to reduce student absenteeism. We saw that our letters from public health were effective. 21% said that was a reason that they offered the clinics. And then the pediatric deaths had a very localized impact. It was reported as a reason for offering clinics among schools that were in the districts where the students had lived. The target population of people that were allowed to participate or allowed to receive vaccine, all schools allowed faculty and staff to receive vaccine. And half of them said, yes, your family members can come. 42% opened up the clinic to students. And the smallest amount, 19%, opened it up to the community or to family members of students. We also wanted to know how many students were immunized at the clinic. And the data there was sketchy. Two of the schools wrote not sure. We don't know how many students were immunized. Several just left the number blank. And some of us referred us to the commercial vaccinator. Similarly, we found out that most schools didn't or weren't able to report the information to child profile or immunization registry because they just didn't know. But among schools that were able to give us the number of students immunized, because that's what we really cared about, the range was from 1 to 100. So the school that was able to immunize 100 students was a private school that had a nurse practitioner full-time and had several nurses working with her and a team of volunteers from the PTA. And the highest public school immunization was 49 students at a school that had a school-based health center. Looking then at the age of students that were offered immunization, we can see that the majority were offering it to students that were 11 and above, followed by 6 to 10 elementary school year, and least common was to offer it to children less than 6 years of age. We wanted to know who is the primary vaccine administrator, and what we found among schools that offered vaccine to students and among all schools was commercial vaccinators. So commercial vaccinators were brought in for the majority, although we did find that while one school nurse, that nurse practitioner I had mentioned, ran her own flu clinic, nurse participation was actually greater because nurses worked in conjunction with the commercial vaccinators at several schools, bringing their total participation up to about 19%. Looking at the cost of vaccine to students, I'll mention here that currently Washington State is a universal coverage state. All children are entitled to receive vaccine under the VFC program. But remember, again, this took place before the new recommendations, so at that point, to receive flu immunization under VFC, you would have had to have a medical reason for doing so. But the range we saw of vaccine costs to students was from $10 to $35, and the lowest fee reported was by school-based health center, that was at $10. And the $35 was from a commercial vaccinator. They had the highest fees, they also had the $30 fee. The average cost to be immunized was $25.60, although if you used a commercial vaccinator, the average cost was $27.20. One of the two school-based health centers said that they had been able to immunize students at no charge using VFC. We assume that the other school-based health center did so as well, although they didn't report it, but they're both on the VFC program. None of the commercial vaccinators are on the VFC program. And further, I'll mention that none of the commercial vaccinators accept Medicaid, and they usually want cash or check. They'll give you a receipt so you can go bill your own insurance if you want. So that's part of the background then when we look at what the cost actually was for students to be immunized. Then looking at the schools that did not offer, and that was 93 of our schools, we wanted to know about decision making. Who made the decision to offer or not offer school-based flu clinics? So on your left side, that would be the private schools, and you can see there the decision was usually made independently by the school administrator at private schools. So it's generally your principal, sometimes the vice principal. In contrast, at the public schools, it was more of a collaborative process. Nurses were most likely to be involved and sometimes independently made that decision, but often made it in conjunction with school administration, which might have been the principal, but we saw a lot of health educators who were involved in the decision-making practice. And also at the district level, the district nurse was likely to be involved and sometimes the district administrator. We asked about the primary barrier that each school had, and the most common response was time. Not enough time to plan the clinic, to organize it, or to implement it, followed by cost being a primary barrier. And I want to point out here that among the schools that mentioned cost, more than half reported specifically a concern that because of the immunization price, it was not equitably available and accessible to all students, regardless of ability to pay. And they didn't want to provide it unless they could offer it equally to all students at their school. And then in an optional space, 8% of the schools told us, well, excuse me, we couldn't provide the clinic, but what we did was we referred. We referred to a local pediatrician, we referred to a pharmacy, we referred to a clinic that we knew was nearby. So that was their way of still trying to enable people to be immunized. So we asked schools, okay, if you didn't offer a clinic this year, are you thinking about it next year? So of the schools that did not offer clinics, 2% said, yes, we're thinking about offering it next year, we plan to. That was 2%. 45% said no. And then 53% said maybe, we need more information. Okay, so there's another target group for Public Health Seattle King County. What do they need if it's maybe? Number one, they wanted someone else to plan, organize, and implement the clinic. Okay, that might be tough. We have 4 public health nurses in our immunization and more than 600 schools, so. Okay, but we keep that in mind. What else? We want it available to all students regardless of ability to pay. And that theme kept coming up over and over. Next, some schools just said, well, give us some information on time, cost, are there any liability issues to us, the administrator, the school, or the school district? Okay, that's something we can help with. And then some said, give us educational flyers so we can do better health education, health promotion, and even help parents understand why this is important. So again, for us, that was great. Another interesting finding we found was only one school said that they needed district approvals. So while that was an option for them, that wasn't something that came up a lot among schools that said maybe, nor among the schools that said no, we're not going to offer it. And we weren't sure how important the district's ruling was on that. But in our research, we didn't find any sort of similarity even between what the district said and what the schools did. There wasn't always convergence of those opinions. So the schools seemed to act independently. I'm gonna read you a brief quote from a public school nurse, and I think it really encapsulated the feeling of the public schools. It takes a lot of time to coordinate an immunization clinic for staff. To coordinate one for students, needing parental permission, not speaking, reading English, not having transportation would take a huge amount of time. Being in a school one day a week and already having mandates from the state legislature to do vision, hearing, and scoliosis screening, mandates from the state legislature to do care plans for students with life-threatening conditions, diabetes, asthma, mandates from the state legislature about immunizations, having a role in the evaluation and re-evaluation of every special education student, CPS reporting, coordinating medication treatments, not to mention the sick and injured children, there simply isn't enough time to add additional burdens to the job. And she went on to say, one day a week just isn't enough time to do all the required stuff, much less additional stuff. We decided that providing information about the importance of flu shots for kids and how to find information was a burden we could start to bear. So the lessons we learned are that nurses are supportive, but they don't have the time to plan, coordinate, and implement the flu clinics. And in addition to the barriers that I described in the research, we also realized that nurses, school nurses, unless they're nurse practitioners, they need to administer vaccine under someone's license, a medical license, but whose? And also the storage and refrigeration issues of maintaining the cold chain if the school is to order vaccine and bring it to the school was another issue that would need to be addressed. Staff and faculty, well, they're already requesting immunizations. They want it, and clearly they're getting it. But they're covered by insurance, and there are no consent issues. And the commercial vaccinators seem to play a role there. They prefer to immunize adults. Some of them had said to us that they were willing to vaccinate children, although some said only older than 9 years, so they had set limitations. But when the schools called them, as we later heard, they told the schools, sorry, actually, we're not going to be able to immunize your students. Except for one, that was the visiting nurse service. And when I spoke with them, what's interesting is they don't just bring out their regular team. They have a special pediatric team that they need to connect with and that they pull in when they're going to immunize students. So there was a little bit more of a barrier there. But the commercial vaccinators make it easy. They bring the vaccine. They bring the VIS. They bring the consents. They have it all. They just show up and do it. So the schools found that really enabled them to offer it. But again, they don't accept Medicaid, so that's an issue for equal access for all students. They don't mind batch charging insurance, but they're not going to look up a lot of different billing information. So as I said, they'll give you a receipt and you can go home and track it down with your insurance company, but they wanted cash or check. And then the price of going to a commercial vaccinator seems to be higher than using a pharmacy or a clinic. With number four, the small numbers that were immunized at the clinics, that was actually pretty surprising to us to see. I guess in our minds we had imagined hundreds, I don't know, very optimistic. But the very small numbers, like that one that reported they immunized one student. And when we looked at the schools that didn't offer a school-based flu clinic, sometimes it was because they had had a small turnout the year before and didn't feel it justified their time. So we think the changes with the new recommendation and all children being able to receive immunization will help sort of mitigate that. But it was something else for us to consider. And finally, the issue of access, and not just financial access, which I've described, but physical access, making sure that there's a second clinic so that children who need a booster dose can get it. And then the educational access, making sure that the consent and the other materials are available in all the languages that people speak in King County. And it's difficult to work with the families that are English as a second language or even just have low literacy when we're sending these materials home, and then sending the consents home and making sure they come back was another challenge area that we'd want to anticipate and address and that we heard about from our schools. So how do we move this then from our research to practice? Well, the pilot studies have found that school-based flu clinics can be successful. Those were using the free vaccine, usually the FluMist, and I'd like to say that most of the commercial vaccinators, actually none of them, used FluMist during this particular study time that we were looking at. So if you don't have free immunization or free vaccine and you don't have volunteer staff, okay, what? In King County, we have seen successful clinics. There was one this year that used dedicated PTA volunteers, and one of the family members of a student was a medical doctor, so he came and it was under his license. But what about schools that don't have those resources or don't have their own nurse practitioner or school-based health center on site? So one possible new approach would be to work in Washington State or in King County to enroll commercial vaccinators or pharmacies in VFC. And maybe that would allow them then to get the free vaccine out. And we've talked with pharmacies. One of the challenges there is that the low reimbursement rate for, again, for Medicaid is something that they don't feel makes it worth their while to come onto the VFC program. They don't want to accept that reimbursement rate. And another opportunity might be for our health jurisdiction to set up an agreement with whether it's a hospital or something like what Carolyn was describing, where the Mary Bridge Hospital and their health jurisdiction have an agreement and she can go out with a mobile clinic and administer at school. So can we do something like that with a set fee in place that would enable someone to go to the school instead of a commercial vaccinator and provide that? So is that something that can be done by our county or by other counties? And then we want to ensure that the second dose does occur. Limitations of the study, the fact that we snail mailed to Invitae online was definitely a barrier because it required the multiple steps to get from the letter to the internet. There was assumption about access to the computer and access to the internet at the school. And we know that some people had difficulty manually entering the link and getting to the right place. I was able to help 14 of those people through. What about the other people that just said, oh, forget it? So we don't, you know, we lost. And I think that impacted our low response rate as well. Happily, we did have a low response rate, but it did reflect 17 of our 19 districts, and it did reflect a good mix of public and private. And finally, our findings are not generalizable outside of this area. So thank you to especially the school nurses and staff who participated and to the rest of the team.
Thank you, all three of you guys. Those were all great presentations. I'd like to open it up now to questions. If you could step up to the microphone and state your name and affiliation.
Hi, Judy Schley from Denver. I just had a question about the, from Dr. El Amin. The mobile units you used, can you define that very clearly to me? You had so many different models, it was hard to understand that one. That was the one that worked the best.
There was one school district that had already in place an ongoing relationship with a nonprofit mobile van affiliated with a hospital. In their catchment area, and historically they had a schedule where this van would go by each of the schools at least a couple of times in the fall offering the regular pediatric vaccines. So there was no cost involved at all. We made sure from the health department that that van had plenty of flu mist so that, and because of the promotional activities around the flu mist made it special, but they already had that infrastructure for doing that, and it was just one mobile van that made the rounds to all the schools in that district.
Lance Chilton from Albuquerque. I would like to compliment all of the speakers on some very varied and very interesting presentations. And I have a comment specifically for Ms. Cook. I'm very glad to see data on the absenteeism in the Mary Bridge Associated Schools. I think they're very similar to the data that came from Carroll County, Maryland, about 2% decrease in absenteeism. Doesn't sound like very much, saying just 2%, and so I would propose a couple of different ways of presenting the data, particularly when we're presenting it to school administrators. If the baseline absenteeism is 7%, to make my figures easy, then that's a decrease in absenteeism of 20%. Mm-hmm. That's impressive. The other way of looking at it is that if a child is absent from school for 3 days with a case of the flu, and you multiply out the percentages, which I did on the back of an envelope, if you miss 3 days of school with the flu, that means that the average child receiving an immunization in school will save 38 minutes of instructional time. If they're 5 days missed for school, it's 63 minutes. And again, that shows pretty good return on investment. It's the kind of data that I will present to school administrators in New Mexico when trying to do this.
Thank you.
My name is Joy Denley, and I'm from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'm actually a pediatric emergency room nurse, but last minute kind of did one of these in my children's private school there. And I think some of the things, I think maybe y'all underestimate, even in public schools, how many people, even in poverty, have computers and use computers or have access to computers. And the only thing we did is last minute, the school did send out one email to parents saying that we were going to offer immunization at the school. They did have to pay for it, by the way. But we sent out one email, and then on the school website, they were directed to go to that. That's where they were directed to the VIS statement and a consent. They were to download it, print it, and return it to the school. And that is all that was done a week before we did this. And I didn't realize how successful we were until listening to some of this. Out of 1,700 students K through 12, we immunized 120. So really, considering that is all we did last minute, no, you know, previous education, I think that was pretty good. So y'all might try. Sure, and the highest percentage, surprisingly, was middle school, which I thought, you know, that would usually be the group that never would take a piece of paper home. So anyway, I think that usage of that school website really helped the paper back and forth. But I do have a question. My biggest fear is immunizing a child that wasn't supposed to get immunized. Did y'all have, you know, because I don't know the children, did y'all use like their teacher to verify who they are so they don't just say, yes, I'm John, or, you know, did y'all have any mishaps at immunizing anyone that wasn't supposed to be?
Hi, we had only one child that got half of a dose of flu mist. She got one squirt, and then she was 8, and she went like this, and she told us in no uncertain terms that her nostrils were too sensitive for flu mist and refused to get the other half.
But you didn't miss immunize anyone. You didn't do someone that wasn't supposed to be.
I'm sorry, what?
to immunize someone, a child, you know, because your parent's not there to...
Yes, we didn't have any trouble, and I had no trouble at all giving the shots either. Generally, I do a lot of school-based clinics, and generally I only do them in middle schools because I think that kids are too little to get shots without their parents, and especially when we're doing multiple vaccines. But it went very, very well, and that was the only child that we had, that just that one girl who refused the second half, who we had any trouble with. The second year that we did have one child who we actually called her parent on our phone, and she was able to talk to her parent throughout getting her flumist, and she did very well. But I was really quite surprised that it went as well as it did, even with the shots. I had not one student who balked at getting their shots, who cried, who objected. We had a few questions before they got it, but, you know, a little bit of reluctance. And if we did have students that seemed a little nervous, we did have the school nurse there who knew them. We did have someone there who knew them. And again, for the special needs kids, I went to them in their environment to give them their shots.
One other question. One of you quickly mentioned that you did rapid screen testing in the school. I think that's what you said, that you did the rapid influenza screen. Can you explain, like, how you did that, to who, and?
The year that, you know, that we did the study that I presented on, we did not do that. We just looked at absentee rates. But this current school year, we were able to secure supplies of rapid flu testing, and so we chose one school district that had performed well last year, which was another school district that did not offer a school-based program. And beginning in February, we trained the staff at the schools on how to use rapid flu testing beginning February, and we had a strict criteria that basically high fever associated with another respiratory symptom. We were interested in those kids. Those kids were identified by the teachers, went to the nursing office, nurse completed a form, got the consent. Ideally, we told the parents about this ahead of time and got the majority of the consents for the parents that said they would allow this. So basically, when we implemented it, we collected specimens. This was not has not turned out to be as big of a flu year as the last flu year, so that we're not sure that we're going to reach statistical significance. But clearly, from the intervention school, I don't think that there's been a positive rapid flu test from the intervention schools. For the non-intervention schools, we've had something like 10 or 15 positive rapid flu tests. So that's something we're doing this year, and we're piloting that to learn how to do that better. And next year, we plan to do it with larger numbers to give us more significance.
Okay, well, we've run out of time, but thank you all so much for attending, and thanks to our speakers. It was a great session. And I have a few announcements. You can stop by.